Most of us are spending a lot of time at home, and it's taking its toll. People are tired of needing to stay put, away from friends and colleagues, even unfamiliar human contact in restaurants, bars, sporting events. We are social creatures, so social distancing and quarantining provokes a negative response. And for those of us feeling a fatigue around quarantine, and I mean those of us feeling it, what do we do? How do we keep living with this pandemic and being socially responsible? And how can we relate to others who are doing the same thing? Dr. Patrick Remington is professor emeritus at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences and director of UW's Preventative Medicine Residency Program. And he's here to talk about it with us. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
I really thought at the beginning of this, you know, I'm committed, I get it, I totally understand, and I can do this, and I'm still all of those things, but the I can do this is wavering a little bit, even for me, and when I was so confident. So where is this restlessness coming from, and am I alone here?
No, I don't think you're alone. I think we see this in any approach where we say that, sort of just say no, or like an abstinence-only curriculum. It might sound good to say stay safe at home and use a mass quarantine, but after a while, people begin to want to take some risks, assessing their own risk, risk of developing disease and the consequences, but also assessing the risk they might pose to others. So it's just a natural reaction once time evolves that people want to explore their own risk and get back to work or get back to socializing.
So some of this does have to do with the length that we're seeing these stay-home restrictions and that feeling building.
Yeah, there's no question that the duration of this quarantine has been wearing on people. The other thing I think a natural reaction is people have gone out. We know from cell phone data that people are beginning to go out to parks, to go out and maybe visit neighbors, again, keeping physically distant. So we see that people are venturing forth. And if you do that a few times and nothing bad happens, you begin thinking, well, maybe I can do it a bit more. It's sort of testing the water. And again, we still know that there's significant risk of disease transmission, and particularly in high-risk settings. But again, as people are taking baby steps, they're noticing that it seemed to work, and so they're willing to take more.
So do we just need to accept then that there's inherent risk there and hope that we'll be okay? Or are there ways that we can get out of this cooped-up feeling and still be responsible?
Well, I think it's a balance between understanding the benefits of staying at home and being quarantined. You reduce the risk to virtually zero because you have no contact. You don't leave the house and nobody comes into the house. But we know that can't last. The other end of the spectrum is to go out and to go to house parties or to go to jam-packed bars or sporting events. And we've seen time and time again when that happens, invariably there'll be disease transmission, an outbreak, and lots of people get sick and some people die. So it's that balance between staying home and going out back to business as usual that we're trying to figure out. And I think each individual has to recognize that there is a risk to going out and to getting an infection. But you need to assess, first of all, the science. What do we know about how this virus is transmitted? And second, what's your tolerance for risk, both for yourself but also the risk that you might pose to others? If you were to get sick, are you a healthcare provider? Are you visiting people who might be at home? And if that's the case, then you may be less likely to take risk, not just for yourself, but the risk you pose to others.
Mm. Dr. Patrick Remington is director of UW's Preventive Medicine Residency Program, and you're part of our conversation right now about feeling some quarantine fatigue. How is the stay-home order affecting you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. We want to know, how are you managing this? Are you having difficulty continuing to keep socially distant? Has it gotten easier for you since the Safer at Home order went into effect? Or maybe it feels harder. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Remington, you said we can't all stay home forever, and yet don't extreme measures like this, everybody staying home, ultimately work?
Oh, of course. If everyone stayed home, we would see maybe one or two cycles within each family, and then the virus would disappear. The virus can't jump out a window or come into your house. So it's an extremely effective method of stopping an epidemic. But we know that some people can't stay home. They're part of the essential workforce, healthcare providers, people providing food and our community safety, police and fire. So we can't be perfect in the stay-at-home order. But the other thing is that staying at home for people who need to go out to earn a living, that's incredibly hard. If you are in the service industry or if you're in the in business where you literally have to go out to earn a living, then that's a very untenable long-term solution. It worked for the last few months. We've seen a dramatic decline in transmission, and we haven't seen what we predicted, which was to be a huge epidemic exceeding our healthcare system's ability to treat really sick people. But now we're sort of lulled into the feeling that since we didn't see that, it's not so risky. And that is not the case. This virus is still circulating in communities. About 95% of the public is still immune and susceptible, sorry, not immune, susceptible to infection. And so if we just go back to business like it was back in January, February, we will see significant outbreaks and disease and death.
So we were asked to stay home. We've stayed home. We've avoided the worst possible scenario. And then we figure, well, I guess it wasn't that bad anyway. So we're safe.
Yes, but we're also in a much better place in the public health system. Mm-hmm. When we put the stay at home or the safer at home order into place, we did not have the testing capacity. We didn't have the public health workforce in place to respond. We're getting there with testing. You heard a new story at the top of the hour where there's lines of people looking to get tested with symptoms or in an occupation where they need to know if they're positive. And the other thing is the public health workforce, the traditional public health approach to a infectious disease like this is to identify cases by testing, isolate them, and then do intensive contact tracing, where we ask the people, where have you been during the period when you might have been contagious? And we call those other folks up or we visit them and we ask them to self-quarantine, to basically go home because they may be infected and they may become contagious. And that's how you sort of do the 101 public health approach. And we will soon have the people in place to do that. We're not quite there. We're in a big hiring program at the state health department, local health department, but we need that public health infrastructure as we begin to go back to business slowly.
So you might be feeling antsy, but don't be lulled into the idea that because we haven't seen the most catastrophe that we're safe.
No, the virus hasn't changed, and the illness will come. People will get sick. We will see continued transmission. What we want to do is reduce the risk. But if it does happen, and it will happen, then we want to have the ability to make a quick diagnosis, implement an isolation for that person who's sick, but then go out and find out everybody that person has been in contact with through contact tracing, and then ask those people to go home, stay safe at home, be quarantined, so that if they do get sick, they don't get others sick as a result.
We're talking with Dr. Patrick Remington. He's professor emeritus in UW-Madison's Department of Population Health Sciences about the breaking points that people are trying to navigate when it comes to this extended social distancing. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How are you holding up while you're holed up? What about after Governor Evers extended the order? Did your mindset change? Are you doing okay? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Our conversation continues here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking with public health expert Dr. Patrick Remington about the realities of quarantine fatigue, how it feels, and what we have to weigh when we determine if we should leave the house. And we want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Have you been out to a store since the new stay-home order allowing people to since the new order allowing people to shop into the stores went in effect yesterday? What was that experience like? Did it help break down some of your quarantine fatigue? Or have you decided to stick tight to home and wait it out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Dr. Remington, what's a sustainable way that we can balance the public health need for us to stay away from one another and our need as social creatures to connect?
Well, a couple of things. First, I personally have found some of the online social media platforms like Zoom and WebEx to be incredibly engaging. So I've talked to many people who have connected with family members or friends that they haven't seen for many, many years through the online social engagement software. So I think that's one way. Just because you're physically distant doesn't mean you have to be socially distant. I think the other thing is that we know the biology of this virus pretty well. We know that it comes out of a sick person maybe before their symptoms develop, but it tends not to float in the air for hours at a time. It tends to go 4 or 5 or 6 feet and then drop. So if you can avoid spreading it by wearing a mask, even if you're not sick, I think it's a good precautionary measure to put a mask on, because you could have been infected. You could be pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic. And just wearing a mask is a signal that you really are concerned about not getting others sick. And then keeping 6 feet away, the chance of getting infected if you keep that physical distance between you and others is very small. And those things, just good hand hygiene, physical distancing, and wearing a mask to prevent others from getting sick should you be sick and not know it, those things can make a huge difference. And you can still interact. You can still gather with people, but keep a distance.
And yet there's social pressure there, in that we know that that's the public health guideline. But certainly I don't want other people to think that because I'm wearing a mask or because I'm standing 6 feet away that I am afraid of them or concerned that they will infect me, although in general we are concerned about transmission. I mean, you're saying those moves are really about protecting everybody else.
Yeah, it's a cultural change. Certainly in Asia, the use of masks has been longstanding and it's accepted. It doesn't raise eyebrows. But the last few months, it has raised eyebrows to see people wearing masks, to see people riding a bike bringing carry out to your car. So I think we'll get used to that. I think it'll become normative to see people wearing masks. Certainly if you go to a clinic or to a healthcare system, you'll see everybody wearing a mask. In fact, not only a mask, but a shield. You'll see plexiglass separation between customers and people working. So I think this will be slowly become more normative as we look not to the few weeks or months, but really a couple of years before the risk of transmission is down or a vaccine is developed.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Patrick Remington about handling that cooped up feeling that we feel as we've stayed home for around 2 months for a lot of people now. And we've got Betsy in Crystal Lake, Illinois, ready to join the conversation. Hey, Betsy.
Hi, Dr. Remington. I was very surprised that they would allow nail salons and hair salons to open, because it's been my experience. I've had friends and myself.
And I'm not sure that we can hear Betsy anymore. But from what she said, Betsy said, you know, hair salons, nail salons, these are places where we're in close contact with one another, certainly violating that 6-foot guideline. Dr. Remington, what about those kinds of activities we might be tempted to do, like going to get a haircut, when we know that that puts ourselves and other people at risk? How do we balance that?
Well, this is exactly the question that we're struggling with. How do you balance the need for economic sustainability for people who, for example, people working in hair salons or in barbershops? That's what they need to do to make a living. Can you make that safe so that the risk is very small? We're doing that in healthcare systems through the use of masks and shields and use of gloves and gowning. So I think those are the type of precautionary measures that can be taken in a place like a hair salon where people working there certainly don't want to be infected, so they should use these precautions, but also customers. the use of a mask, the use of careful hand washing, separating people rather than waiting and sitting in a chair right next to somebody, sitting remotely, or even waiting outside. So I think if you take certain precautions and you, most importantly, don't go into this setting if you're symptomatic at all. Don't go and wear a mask. If you have symptoms, stay away. Call your doctor, decide whether you need a test, and avoid those settings. But even if you're not symptomatic, take the precautions, and I would do as much as you could. If that's an essential service and you feel you want to go get a haircut or go to a hair salon, then take as many precautions as you can.
All right. Thank you so much. Dr. Remington, we really appreciate you catching us up on this and talking about that quarantine fatigue that's weighing on some of us. We appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences and also Director of UW's Preventive Medicine Residency Program. And we talked to him today about getting through the difficulties of being ordered to largely stay at home for weeks, maybe months on end.